Well, we're back at Administrative Static and talking about the tremendous victory in the Garland v. Cargill case at the Supreme Court. This is the bump stock ban case where the Supreme Court did the right thing and said ATF cannot alter a statute's meaning. There were a couple of, we were starting to say at the end of the last segment, there were a couple of things that I thought that the court said even better than maybe we had argued it. And one, the one that jumped out at me was this whole sort of argument that, well, you say that there's manual inputs required for a bump stock, but there's manual inputs required for a machine gun too. You have to not just pull the trigger, but you have to hold it down. And this happened at the Fifth Circuit and then again at the Supreme Court. The government tried to make it out as though these were
equivalent.
Yeah, and they're not at all. I mean, it takes a lot of effort and strength and everything else, because on a bump stock, you're really trying to resist overcome the recoil in order for it to function. And that's not the way that a regular machine gun works at all. You just hold down the trigger and it fires. And as long as you don't, as long as it doesn't fall out of your hands, you're good. But what the court said was a closer textualist argument. They said that the additional manual inputs that were required for a bump stock were at the forefront of the rifle, like the foregrip of the rifle, which is not part of the trigger. Whereas with a machine gun, the so-called additional input is on the trigger itself. And so I thought that was a better way to capture the difference between the two than maybe we had presented precisely in the briefing and the oral argument.
And then they took that and they used the Ithaca shotgun to show that because what apparently you do with that is you hold the trigger, but you take the breech, you load it by pumping the
right.
shotgun.
Yeah.
And you're holding the trigger down, but you're pumping the shotgun. And the government had admitted that was not machine gun. But their idea of that was because it was manually loaded, which has nothing to do with the statute at all.
Yeah.
So once they admitted that, and the other thing is that almost any gun could be a machine gun. Because they were using this language about altering a gun, and that would make almost every semi-automatic a machine gun, which Congress was trying not to do, which everyone acknowledges. And I can't see in the dissent. Now, obviously, it's been just a day. We haven't.
And that was the fear. If right. we lost this case, that was the fear right. that this was opening the door for all semi-automatics.
So I don't know. I didn't see any
by ATF.
I didn't see anywhere where the dissent addressed that question, because I think under their interpretation, that would be what would happen. That every gun was a machine gun, supposedly.
Or potentially every gun yeah. that ATF decided was a machine gun.
Right. So that was a big danger to people's liberty, because the other thing is on the rule of lenity here, our clients.
Which was a big part of the Fifth Circuit's decision yes. and a very tiny part of this decision.
Correct. And I want to ask that question for both of you. But I just want to make this one point. The fact is that you made a lot of people criminals very fast with no congressional action. That did come across.
So
they didn't like that.
It made people criminals for what they had done before?
Yes.
That's
yeah.
really
yeah. In fact,
crazy.
At oral argument, the Solicitor General said that every owner of a bump stock was always a felon, and it was only prosecutorial discretion that kept DOJ from prosecuting people now. And I just got to say, she didn't win any friends with that argument.
Well,
that
no,
oral
yeah,
argument.
Right. It was out of the goodness of their heart.
It would have been one thing to say going forward.
She did.
But
she
but see, the reason they can't say, but just this is important, yeah. the reason you can't say going forward is because then you're not interpreting the law.
Right.
Right. So they said this is just an interpretation of what the statute always meant.
Right.
And so it can't be a prospective interpretation.
Yeah, but it wasn't even Prelogar. It was
Brian Fletcher. Did I say
yeah,
Prelogar?
You did.
Okay,
so it was Brian
sorry.
Fletcher.
Yeah,
but
you're right.
But
you're
still,
right.
he was trapped. He was trapped in that problem, and he was saying, well, and then he saw their reaction. He said, well, even I think we would be prevented through some estoppel that the court has come up with before. So it wouldn't just be out of the goodness of our hearts. It's actually the law that we're not allowed to do this once we've made
it. No, they can do it, but you'd have a defense.
Yeah, you'd have a
right.
defense.
Okay.
That's
but
what
nothing
he said.
Stops them
correct.
From arresting you.
But
wow.
he didn't like the way it was going, so he said he was bringing up defenses for the other side. He knew. And
so
it was a bad
they'd
argument.
Basically be saying you can't rely on the agency's interpretation at the time.
Right.
Yeah,
that
right.
didn't change the law.
That's right.
So, because they were saying, so I do think that really bothered the court. And I think it would have come out this way either. But for both of you, here's my question. if it's 6-3 and you know, all of the majority thinks this is absolutely clear, they're just absolutely dismissive of the dissent, dismissive of it for the reasons I think I was here. How come so many judges came out the other way, even originalist, textualist judges?
Chevron. That's the reason. If you look at the lower courts, now that wasn't part of what happened here because the not only did the government disclaim reliance on Chevron, but the judges didn't sort of input it in the case. If you look at the D.C. Circuit or the Tenth Circuit case, Chevron was all over those cases. There really weren't any lower court judges who bought the statutory interpretation argument that the government was pitching. There were quite a few who bought the Chevron deference. You know, it's reasonable enough. We're willing to sort of give it to you in a Chevron deference world. But not the other way. That's why it was a 13-3 decision at the Fifth Circuit, a bipartisan decision, because there were some who said straight up, we agree with you on the statutory interpretation ground. And there were some who said, well, rule of lenity ground, we agree with you. But we counted a 13 there. But there were only a couple who thought that there was maybe all three, I can't remember now for sure, who thought that the statutory interpretation argument could survive without the thumb on the scale that Chevron gives.
I think maybe in Eric Jaffe's case, the district court thought it was statutory, but that was an outlier, I think. And I could even be wrong about that, but I think I remember him complaining about it. So the fact is that you did have this wide variety of opinions, though, which from a statutory area, I really don't think it. I you're right. The fact that the circuit said we don't care, the government isn't claiming Chevron, we're going to do it anyway. It was kind of result oriented. That's kind of a result oriented thing to do, and I think it goes to this emergency issue that the courts want to say, look, in an emergency, you get to do a lot.
Which is wrong. That's the purpose of the Constitution.
I think I'd reinterpret Sotomayor's dissent. If it quacks like a gun, if it walks like a gun, then, you know, she's not going to like it, I think is what she's saying. So, can I just quickly say congratulations to Jonathan Mitchell, who argued this case for us at the Supreme Court. Congratulations to Rich Samp, our retired former colleague, senior litigation counsel, who argued this case en banc at the Fifth Circuit. Both great arguments and both successful. And a special thank you to Steve Simpson, who got us to the starting line in this case. Once upon a time, is the one who found Michael Cargill and brought him to NCLA as a client.
Yeah, before I got here, exactly. So I think that. But look at how long that took.
Yeah.
So
I think this was in 2019.
I've been here more than four years, right?
Right. Yeah. No, that's right. This is more than 5 years that we've been pursuing this case. Just over 5 years, but we've only been litigating for coming up on six. This is one of our oldest cases, so it's very gratifying to see this result. And congratulations to Michael Cargill, who has stood by us thick and thin throughout this whole litigation.
And I do want to say, so one thing that's been pointed out, the lower court, talking about hostility, the lower court didn't give us any relief even when we won in the Fifth Circuit. Now I think he's going to get his bump stocks back. I mean, I think we need an order about that.
Yeah, we'll have to get an order maybe from the Fifth Circuit. Maybe this will go to the Fifth Circuit first and they'll just order the return of the bump stocks and we don't have to get the district court involved again. That'd be nice. Judge Ezra in the Western District of Texas tried to, on remand from the en banc Fifth Circuit, tried to not give any relief, which was ridiculous. But I don't think he's going to try that twice now that he's been caught in the act.
What actually happened to Mr. Cargill? I don't think I know.
Oh, so what he did was he handed over his two bump stocks.
So when the ATF?
Yes, okay. And he did it under protest.
And with some news cameras, I think.
Yeah, and ATF agreed to keep those bump stocks and not destroy those bump stocks until this was over. So they still have somewhere in the ATF archive.
Locker.
Yeah, in the locker down there, they have his bump stocks, which I assume they can return.
That would be a good photo.
Yeah, that's there you go.
Well, and I was talking to Clark Aposhian today, who's our other client out in Utah, and you know, and he thinks the ATF still has his as well. And so, you know, hopefully we'll be able to bring that one to a resolution quickly, and he'll get his bump stock. You know, he was the last man in America with a legal bump stock, you may recall, and maybe Clark will be the first one to have a legal bump stock back.
Returned.
I don't know, returned. But But some people have been
telling. And all the people who kept them illegally are now fine, right? Because it wasn't illegal.
Well, you know, there may be some folks out there who buried them in the backyard or whatever, but.
I'm shocked to hear that.
Well, you know, I'll tell you the problem with what happened here with ATF, and this isn't on the Supreme Court, this is on ATF. Because they've engaged in this unlawful rulemaking, they are going to cause more people to think that the next time that ATF does a rulemaking, that it is right. unlawful and they're not going to comply with it, or they're going to bury something in the backyard or whatever instead of voluntarily turning it in. Because 500,000 people were turned into felons by this rule, and I don't know how many of those bump stocks were destroyed or turned into ATF, but none of them should have been, we now know. And that's a problem for ATF in the same way that it's a problem for CDC and the public health authorities to be caught lying about certain aspects of COVID.
I was like, everything reminds me of COVID.
So, I
want to say anything else about the dissent?
So I've told you what I think of the dissent. I thought that Sam Alito's concurrence was just a roadmap for the Congress. And I mean, I think it was good all around. I told you, I am sad that Kagan wasn't with the majority.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I am too. And I should say.
Or at least you should have said about the engagement, and she might not have joined the automatic and hold it for another day. Maybe she didn't think she needed something, anything.
I could have seen that she joined one half, but not the other half of the statutory analysis. I could have seen that. And a quick thank you to Shang Li, too, for working on this case at the Supreme Court. You know, we were very happy with the decision from the court. I think it's a solid, sound decision, and it's a good one for self-government because it needs to be the elected officials who are making these sorts of things, not the unelected federal bureaucrats.